Hello, and welcome to the Roswell Presbyterian Church podcast. Today's episode is a part of our ongoing series, Closing the Distance. These are unscripted conversations with our pastors and other guests, reflecting on topics from our ongoing sermon series. If you are interested in learning more about this community of faith, visit roswellpres.org.
This is Jeff Myers, one of the pastors here at Roswell Presbyterian Church, with Dan Kreiss, our missions pastor here at the church, who preached on Sunday. Great sermon, great message. Closing the distance like we do every week, trying to unpack the message, get behind maybe what was presented in the 22 and a half minutes, get some details. And Dan, I'm very interested today because I really want to unpack the details behind that was maybe hidden in your message. How'd you feel how it went?
I don't know, Jeff, but you do it four times. I don't know how you do it every week.
Well,
and everyone, again, for me, because I'm not using notes in front of me, everyone is slightly different. So
I heard it twice. I heard it at 9:30 and then the modern service at 10:45. Hopefully the slides force you to be a little bit consistent.
Yeah, but you can't see the slides, so I have no idea.
Well, they were good. I didn't see them at 9:30, but I did see them at 10:45. They were good. There were some very good, as a slide user myself, I was very impressed with some of the slides.
Oh, well, good.
So kind of the premise that you began with is the sermon series, This Is My Story. And you said, you kind of rejected the premise and said, this is God's story, which I think is absolutely correct. But our story is, we only see God's story through our own story.
Correct.
So I would be interested, Dan, where did your story begin? Where are you from originally?
Oh, we're going back that far. Well, I was born at a very young age in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay, let's just pause right there. From Philadelphia, I'm sorry about last night. 76ers, really, really tough, tragic loss. Gave up 6 points in about 10 seconds to lose the game at Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks. Didn't want to bring that up. Just want to put it out there so we know that this is a part of your story as well.
You were sitting there because I had no idea until just now.
Well, you got to go watch Thanks. The highlights.
All right. Well, I end up closing the distance for the day. Thanks all for us.
Get your tissues out.
Exactly. Yeah. So my love of all things Philly, like the Philadelphia Phillies and the Eagles and all that, was legitimate. So, yeah. You know, I get a hard time in Braves country, but, you know, what can you do?
Did you live your, I mean, because you went to college at Eastern in Philadelphia.
I did. I lived all over the place as a young guy, but went back to high school and college outside of Philadelphia before moving to New Zealand. So, but my dad was born and raised in Philadelphia in one of the districts in Philadelphia. So even when we were like living in Southern California and, you know, in Dodgers area, we were still Phillies fans.
That had to be tough.
It was not easy.
Well, when I was in seminary, I spent a lot of time in Philadelphia and have a deep love for that city. It's a really great place. And I really enjoy it. I think it kind of takes a bad rap sometimes as kind of the ugly stepsister to New York City.
Well, their sports fans are no nonsense. So we know that.
Yeah. So did you always know you were called to be a pastor?
No, not at all. Matter of fact, I mentioned, again, every sermon was different, but one of the times I was like, this is a new gig. I knew that I was, again, I mentioned this in the sermon, but I was pursuing law enforcement or a career in the Navy. That's kind of what I anticipated was happening. And through some involvement with people in my life and got connected with a youth ministry organization called Young Life. Somebody convinced me that like those things are really good, particularly law enforcement, but that you have an affinity for young people and that you might be better served by being, you know, a guardrail or a fence at the top of the cliff rather than, you know, an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff for these young people, preventing them from getting into the situation where they have confrontations with law enforcement or whatever. And so, you know, I changed course completely. And yeah, for better or worse, this is where we ended up. And yeah, so it's taken me all over the world. It's completely changed the story that I believe God was wanting to write with my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I turned it things on its head in terms of this is my story, essentially recognizing that, yes, God is using me in the story that God is writing. So it is my story in many ways. But I think as faithful followers of Jesus, it's really allowing God to use us in the story that God is writing. And so that's kind of the way I tried to flip it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some people may not be familiar with Eastern. I'm familiar with Eastern, where you went to undergrad. Because, yeah. I mean, the famous Tony Campolo was from there. Did you have any relationship with Tony?
I had a little relationship with Tony at that time. So this was in the dark ages. This is back in the 80s. He was still teaching one day a week. On Mondays was his teaching day. And he taught all freshmen sociology 101, which is crazy for him. That was his main course. So it's huge lecture hall. Tony's there, and his lectures were phenomenal. But then the rest of the week, this was mid-80s, so he was at the peak of his speaking power. He would be out traveling the world, speaking at camp conferences and churches and all that kind of stuff, to raise awareness of the needs of underprivileged and all the things that he spoke about. So I really got to know him a little bit better after college, as he came to speak at conferences and that, where I was kind of engaged and involved. And so I would, again, especially when I was in New Zealand and he would come to New Zealand to speak, they're like, oh, let's stick the American with the American. So I'd be his chauffeur around for, you know, different places and all that.
That's
and
awesome.
Then the one that he recruited, Duffy Robbins, who's kind of a big name in youth ministry circles, he's kind of a mentor of mine, actually a good friend of mine, is in town tomorrow for the Orange Conference. I'm going to go hang out with him tomorrow.
Oh, very cool. Well, yeah. For folks who may not be familiar with Tony, I would encourage them to go on YouTube. I mean, it's not an overstatement to say he was one of the great American preachers of his
yes.
generation. I mean,
really was.
If you had to like, Summer, what was like his great theme of his ministry and preaching?
I mean, his main focus was to try and help young Christians who were trying to find their way to understand that they couldn't just adopt or accept what he thought called our American consumer culture. Like mm-hmm. they had to live a completely different life if they were going to be true to the gospel. And he was highly concerned, hyper concerned with just the assimilation that seemed to be happening within the Western church, but particularly the American church, in terms of materialism and hedonism and all these isms that basically said, God is here to make sure that my life is comfortable and I have everything I need. And that's how I know that I'm a faithful Christian. So, you know, the juxtaposed to, you know, the prosperity gospel, essentially.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet him a couple times, nothing like you, but and his like book Red Letter Christians, I think, is a really kind of a representative, if people are interested in following up.
Yeah.
I think he did, at least in my life, he was really pivotal in coming from an evangelical perspective, but talking about justice and that our salvation was not just a get out of hell free card, and you know that it was supposed to make our faith was supposed to make an impact on the ground in our lives here and now.
Yeah. So he, you know, he has an older book now called Who Switched the Price Tag, asking the question, would Jesus drive a BMW? You know, again, because it was a status symbol, and still is in so many suburban evangelical churches. They'd come up in their BMWs, and it would just it would light him up. He was so angry that people would spend his money for he used to drive around what he called the pimp mobile, which was an old Oldsmobile station wagon, 1970s. I mean, rusty, all this kind of stuff. He's like, no, we don't. It gets me from A to B. That's the purpose. It's not, you know, it's not to be a reflection of who I am necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, status symbol. So yeah.
I remember something in Seattle when I was in undergrad, and he said something like that, but not about me. It was about Mercedes. And right. And it so happened that in the congregation was the owner of the Mercedes dealership in town.
He didn't care.
No, he did not pull his punches.
No.
Okay, so you go to Eastern. Now, where did you meet Cindy, your wife?
We met at Eastern. So we actually were volunteer leaders for the youth organization Young Life together. And so we were pretty good friends before I finally convinced her that I was the one.
Yeah.
It took a little convincing.
Well, it obviously worked because you've traveled the world together and still doing
ministry. Still hanging on, which is, you know, we're all kind of surprised at, but.
So you mentioned this, and a lot of people may not know this. So then you guys go, I mean, like, you get married, and then, like, right away you go to New Zealand, right?
So I was a year ahead of her in school, so I left right away. I left a couple of days after graduation and was there for 18 months, and so we were separate. So, yeah, and this is...
That's long distance. That's long distance.
It's really long distance. This is the dark ages. This is before the internet or any of that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's snail mail or phone calls, which, again, before cheap telephone calls. So it cost me $3.70 a minute off peak. So there weren't a lot of phone calls. So, but we made it through that very rocky time. It was difficult. And I got back and we got married. And then 4 days after marriage, headed back to New Zealand, supposedly for a year, but we're there together 15 years.
Wow. Well, I'm going to ask you about your time in New Zealand. I want your opinion about this when we're thinking about stories. So I complained about doing long distance because I was in Atlanta. My wife was in California and I thought that was a long way, but New Zealand and, you know, America, that's very far.
That's a very long way. That's World War II-ish, you know, when you're kind of separated by, you know, and get a letter once a month or something like that.
It was my feeling now looking back on it that doing long distance was really helpful in terms of learning how to communicate, because you were forced in some ways. Not, you didn't, you know, you had to be really intentional about taking time, express telling about your life, asking questions. Did you find that to be true in your guys' long distance relationship?
In some ways, I think it matured us and it gave us the understanding that, you know, in this, even this very early stage of our relationship, we were able to endure some pretty tough stuff. And so that just meant that I think it set us up for the future. So yeah, in terms of communication and in terms of building a sense of trust and commitment to one another, for sure. But that's not always the case. You know, there's those two adages, right? There's out of sight, out of mind. That's one. So we just kind of move on. Or absence makes the heart grow fonder. And I think, you know, in some instances, both of those are true.
Right.
So I think if the relationship is right and you kind of understand it, then I'm not going to find anything better than this, that God has brought this into my life, I better not screw this up, then absence makes the heart grow fonder. But if you're kind of self-absorbed and whatever else, and it's like, oh, I wonder what else is around the corner.
Yeah, for sure. So she moves to New Zealand. You guys are there together. And you spend how long? 20 years in New Zealand?
About 15 years together. So our kids were born there. And we were working in Youth for Christ for a period of time. Then I was a youth director, youth pastor at a PCNZ Church, Presbyterian Church of New Zealand. And then for 10 years, I was a chaplain and counselor at an all-boys day school, about 650 students, middle school through high school.
Wow. And you have four children.
Yes.
Were they all born and raised?
They're all born there. So they're all dual citizens. And the youngest is there now, which is why we went back in January. He's there now at university. Got one more year of university. So, yeah.
How old are your kids now?
See, it changes every year, Jeff. It's hard to keep track. But the oldest turns 32 next month, and the youngest is 21.
Okay. Wow. And so, I mean, the pivotal, you know, formation of their lives was in New Zealand. So what brings you back to the United States?
So we come back to the United States. Again, we were content and not expecting to leave, but we found it increasingly difficult to maintain connection with our biological family, particularly our parents, who were getting older and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so it was either the oldest at that time was 13 years old. So it was either we go now or we never go. Like, this is it. We're permanent citizens of New Zealand and people have to come visit us, because we would see them once every 2 or 3 years. And, right. And that was it. So I got an opportunity to, through Duffy Robbins, again, my mentor and friend from Eastern, to run the youth ministry program at King University in Bristol, Tennessee. So that was, again, training people to be youth directors and youth pastors all over the world. And so that was a tremendous opportunity. And in doing that, at the same time, I was coaching basketball at the collegiate level, and then ran a cycling team for a while at the collegiate level. I was dean of the School of Missions. So continue to have those opportunities to not only direct and teach people who are going to work with young people, but then shape and influence the lives of the collegiate students that were there. And it was fantastic. Loved it.
And where is King?
So King's in Bristol, Tennessee, the very northeast corner. So yeah, it's one side of the city is Virginia. The other side is Tennessee. So, yep.
Kind of cool. How long were you at King?
Again, about 15 years or so. From
a significant amount of time.
Yeah. 2005 till 2019.
And then you've come, then you made the transition to RPC.
And then came down here. There was a little brief period there where we had pandemic and no one was doing anything. And so I was a bike mechanic during the pandemic most of the time. That's kind of, you had to put food on the table. So
sure.
I was leading works. I was doing Trenton's job, although not nearly as talented as Trenton. And then bike mechanicing. And yes, and then we come down to RPC.
So, okay.
In pastoral ministry, which, as you said, was not what I was anticipating. But here we are.
Yeah, here you are. So,
part of the sport.
So some details here, I think, that is good for people to know. Avid cyclist. You love to bike.
Yep.
Guitar player and singer.
Somewhat.
Who's your favorite musician, artist?
Individual or group?
Both.
I mean, I grew up on U2, so I love U2. You can't beat them.
I love you too.
Yeah. Individual artists. I mean, like, I'm a huge fan of McCartney. Always loved McCartney. Kind of grew up on McCartney. But like a group called out of Canada called Lord Huron. They're kind of my.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Love those. Seen them in concert a couple of times. And yeah, they're fantastic. Really kind of a cool sound. So like those guys a lot too.
And I'm looking up, who did you introduce me to? Oh, who is it? Is it Bruce
Springsteen? Oh, Bruce
Coburn.
Bruce Coburn. Yeah.
Yes.
Bruce Coburn's another huge one. Yep.
Yeah.
Guys. Yeah. Lord Huron's kind of the young one. Everyone else is kind of old.
Are you a Crowded House fan?
Huge Crowded House fan. They're going to be in Atlanta in the end of August.
Are they? They're from New Zealand, right?
They're Kiwis, yep.
Wow, I love Crowded House.
Yeah, me too.
Neil Finn, right?
Yeah.
I saw his son play with Eddie Vedder here at on that solo record when they were touring it. I think Cobb Performing Arts Center. It was pretty awesome.
Interesting.
All right. So now, what do you do here at RPC?
So my role here at RPC is, as you said, missions outreach pastor. So one of the main roles is to help RPC be more connected to the mission partners that we serve. We have about 17 or 18 mission partners. Most of those are domestic, like within the shadow of the church, most of them, very, very close. including like the Scouts program that we endorse, and Homestretch, and Drake House, and North Fulton Community Charities, Children's Development Academy. And then there's currently three international partners, one in Kenya, one in Guatemala, and another in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. And so trying to, again, help us to get connected to them, ensure that the finances that we're supporting them with are being used correctly and appropriately, and again, helping RPC to be genuine with the service that we provide in our community to the people in need. And we're surrounded by people in need. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So if what are some ways that people can get involved on the ground?
Well, there's lots of different ways. I hate to point people to the website, but that's a really good place because there's just a list there of how do I get involved. So, you know, six times a year, we have what we call RPVs, which is Roswell Presbyterian Volunteers. And those are Wednesday nights at the same time that Encore is happening. And it's a short term, kind of an hour or so hit of a service project where we're making sandwiches that will then be distributed in homeless shelters. Or the last time we packed a bunch of flood buckets that are going to be in preparation for people who have natural disasters in the area. They're ready to go, shipped out. We've done Easter baskets and Christmas stockings for children who are foster kids. And so those are again pretty low commitment level in terms of the time involved, but the impact is huge. And so we do food packing once a year where this past time we made, I don't know, 26,000 meals or something like that gets shipped to Guatemala. And we were there a few weeks ago. We actually helped deliver some of those meals to the families that need them, which was to be from one end to the other was pretty fantastic.
It's pretty awesome.
There are other ways to volunteer, and we're hosting Family Promise in a couple of weeks, and we need hosts all the time, people that will make meals, people that will stay overnight, and just, you know, again, be welcoming to the families that use that nonprofit. And so Family Promise is a great one. But again, to contact me or Donna, or look on the website and say, how can I be involved?
I was just going to say, one of the coolest things about the RPV events and meal packing is to see like multi-generation families.
Yes.
So like, you have like grandparents, parents, and kids all volunteering side by side. I brought our son one time. I'm not sure how much work we actually did, but we were here.
He's getting older. He's getting better all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really cool to have these like little windows of opportunity to serve and kind of wake, especially young people up, because they have so much of their lives left, to wake them up to the impact
Absolutely.
And the meaning that they can have through service. You mentioned you just got back from Guatemala. There's a couple other opportunities for folks to travel outside of the Roswell area that are coming up. I'm thinking of the Border Encounter Experience and the Kenya trip. Could you say a little bit about each of those opportunities?
Yeah, sure. So again, we haven't been back to Kenya in a few years, but Zablon Curia, who a former staff person who used to work in our facility staff, you know, we've been supporting the ministry that he has there in Kenya for probably 20 years or nearly 20 years, supporting a nursing school and foster children. And now these kids are kind of aging out of the educational system. And so now he's developing a computer lab and employing a bunch of students through this computer lab. So yes, we're hoping to go there late June, early July. But we'll reschedule that if that means that more people can come. And then the Border Encounter, we've got a Zoom meeting coming up in a few weeks for anyone that's interested, one, in finding out what's going on the border from the perspective of one of the pastors who lives in El Paso there. And then for those who want to come, a small group of us to go and participate in a three-day border encounter where, again, we kind of hear some of the stories, we hear from a border guard, we look at some of the shelters that are on the U.S. side, we meet with some of the people on the Juarez side, and really get a perspective that's different than what we see on MSNBC or Fox News or all that kind of stuff. And recognize the humanitarian crisis and regardless of our political persuasion, recognize that we have a responsibility as followers of Christ to help these people in whatever way. And again,
yeah,
regardless of political ideology, that there are people in need, there are people who are really suffering.
Yes, absolutely. And you and I had the opportunity to go down El Paso and do a border encounter. We crossed the border, and it was really impactful to see the literal human faces of the people who are in just tragic, dire circumstances. And I think that was so helpful. And I think it was our intention to go see it for ourselves, to say, is this something I think that'd be really helpful for our people to experience? And so I hope folks will take advantage of that opportunity. I think they'll find it very impactful and eye-opening.
Yeah, if people are interested in either of those things, they can just shoot me an email, dan@roswellprez.org. I've got a list, a pretty long list now, people who want to participate in that Zoom meeting about the border encounter. And we've got Zablon Curia is going to be speaking at all the services on Sunday, May the 5th. And then immediately following the 11 o'clock service, say 12:15 or so, just a gathering for people who want to hear more about what he's doing and how they as individuals or we as a church can support the ministry there. And then again, if people are interested and want to say, hey, I'd really like to go to Kenya and see it for myself and also have opportunity to experience some of God's creation on some of their national parks or national reserves, which are just mind-blowing. So
yeah absolutely. And I would highly encourage, and I went to Kenya maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and the stuff we learned and brought back and tried to implement here at RPC, it was really exciting to be in a real partnership of both giving and receiving. I think it's pretty rare in international mission partnerships to be so partnering in a real way, and Zablon's doing innovative stuff. So a lot to learn, and really, really exciting if people can swing it to go. Okay, so I don't want to bury the lead. You just published a book that you co-wrote. Could you say a little bit about Church for Everyone?
Yeah, where is it? I don't know. Wait, let me
grab it. You're literally flying off the shelves.
Yeah. All right, some have heard about this. So again, this is the book that got released in February. I think the last time we were on Closing the Distance together, you asked about it. And again, it's an encouragement for the church to be a little bit introspective and be intentional about being what we call multi-inclusive, particularly in response to emerging generations, which are those 40 and under, who are the most diverse generation ever, not only ethnically, but in all sorts of ways, in terms of their political persuasion, in terms of their understanding of gender identity, all that kind of stuff. They're much more diverse than any previous generation. And yet the church still remains pretty monoculture in all sorts of ways. And so that creates some barriers. So yeah, this book is for people that are interested in that. I know there's one women's Bible study that is in the midst of reading it, and I got invited to join them for lunch. They said, so that you can help us understand the long words that you use. it's not super academic, but a little bit. And I talked to Terry Kish, and also the next chapter Sunday school class is going to host probably an 8-week study of this book in the fall for Sunday school. So again, so it's not a permanent thing. If you're in some of the other classes, SALT or THINK or any of those things, you could grab this book and we could work through it together and then go back to your normal Sunday school classes. But we're excited about that. That's probably going to start the week after Labor Day once everyone's here. And
awesome. Yeah. I really encourage people to take advantage of that. It's rare you have somebody on staff who's kind of an expert on these emerging generations and thinking about what the future looks like for the church and culture. So thank you for all your work and sharing your wisdom.
Absolutely. Have you read it yet, Jeff?
I have not. I have not. I'm trying to finish.
I've got a copy right here if you want one.
I need to. excuse me. Okay, so we've got to wrap up here. Dan, we'll be in prayer for your 76ers who are down 0-2 to the New York Knicks.
Really? We're 0-2? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you're down 0-2 first round. Joel Embiid's got one leg. It's not looking good, but We believe in miracles.
Well, yeah. With Joel not doing well, it's probably not.
Poor guy.
Not great.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you for closing the distance today. I encourage people to take advantage of the stuff we talked about in Mission Outreach. Get a hold of Dan. You can get all his wisdom about flourishing long-distance relationships.
And that's right.
All right, bud. I'll see you soon. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care.